Representing East Oakland, man.
Welcome, welcome back, guys. Season 3, the Hawk Vision Podcast. I'm your host, Chuck Hawkins, here to help you shorten the learning curve on your way to greatness. Over 100 interviews of successful entrepreneurs and thought leaders have graced this show so that we can understand the process of chasing and achieving and see what greatness really looks like. Make sure you like, share, subscribe across all your social media platforms, especially here at YouTube. More importantly, share this podcast with other visionaries just like you. Before we get started, take a look at the show notes. You'll see a way to support the show by buying your boy a cup of coffee or two from my subscribers. You'll receive something on the back end from me personally. You'll also see about sponsorship and advertisement opportunities. Definitely taking the show to the next level. For my subscribers that do support the show, you'll receive something from me personally. Now that all that is out the way, our guest this week, if you guys have IGs, one of the most consistent sources of valuable information that I've come across in some time, with thousands of followers depending on him to teach them about the infinite possibilities of real estate and investing. He's been on my radar for a good minute, and we're lucky enough to have him join the show. He's a realtor, teacher, motivator, and someone that I have tons of respect for, Mr. Anthony Lee. Welcome to the show, sir.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm glad to be here, and I appreciate you having me.
Absolutely, man. Like I said, we were talking, and I've been watching the growth, not only of your page, but of what you've been doing in real estate, man. And it's a dream of mine to my end game. You know, I want to own about 750 properties. And so a lot of my listeners want to know how they can invest as well. And I think that there's nobody better for them to learn from, man. I'm glad you're here.
Well, I appreciate that. And I mean, at the end of the day, that's definitely the goal, to educate and share, because I feel like for me and my journey, the stuff I know now, I wish somebody would have told me sooner, or just, you know, like nobody told me high school, college, none of this stuff. And I'm like, I've been working this hard and I didn't have to do all of this time. I just needed to buy some houses.
Just that's it. Listen, my sister I want to say a superintendent of schools. So she's been principal of principals, whatever that position is. And it's funny because me and her always have this debate. The wealthiest people in the world have licenses and not degrees. And we go back and forth off of that, because
like two masters.
Yes. And is in another program. And she does very well for herself. I'm not saying that, but I wish that, to your point, when we were younger, somebody would have taught us about real estate license, Series 7, 63, life insurance. Mm-hmm. Those are the things that the wealthy knew. And then they send us to go get degrees to not mess up their money.
So your sister's super successful, and I respect what she does, because we need people in the schools.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yes.
And I always tell people my degree, I have a bachelor's in early childhood elementary education. So I tell people, okay, First and foremost, I'm always going to be an advocate, especially for Black and brown young men to go to college, because I feel like for me, more so, it was a maturity thing. And also for me to find my tribe. Yeah. So depending on what community you come from, culture you come from, you don't know what else is out there in the world unless you go somewhere that you can meet all these people. So unless you got money to travel, to me, college gives you all those opportunities, especially, you know, if you go to a diverse university, or even if you go to a HBCU or however it goes. But it's the chance for us to be able to reach out and touch the world and do it at an affordable, to me, somewhat affordable, because you can be broke in college and still and still be up. So, you know, if you take that model, and like you said, and I'm, again, add in a skill or two or a license or two, and that's where the money is, because I've learned the difference between being a business person and a hustler is the person that actually has the certificates or licenses to actually promote, be visible, and it has insurance to cover what they do. I know a lot of handymen, they're just handymen. They can't be on the job site and be the main person. That's why they get paid labor prices.
Right.
Absolutely. But in order for me to really make the bulk of the money, I don't do any of the work, but I rehab houses and make money for rehabbing houses that I don't do any of the work. I'm rehabbing like four houses right now. I haven't touched any of them.
I love it. I love it.
One piece, these one or two pieces of paper.
Right. That's it. So let's jump into it, man. We gotta do the origin story. My daughter would kill me. She's a huge X-Men fan, and she would kill me if I didn't ask for the origin story. So what happens in Anthony's life where he says, you know what, I want to work for myself and become an entrepreneur?
So with my story's kind of, I'll give you the short version of it. So for me, like we talked about things in our blood, and like I've struggled with trying to figure out how I really got here, but I want to say now in my life, I narrowed it down.
Okay.
It was always in my blood to be an entrepreneur, or at least to be a hustler, right?
Yes.
So in my family, in my community, I've seen different entrepreneurs / hustlers.
Yes.
At an early age, my dad had me selling clothes with him at hair salons and barbershops. And then he had me washing cars. Okay. I was washing. He would get off work. We'd go to the barbershop salon like baby boy.
Yes.
He let me be in the forefront because people say I'm little and cute. I make a quick $5. I'd wash the tires and help dry the car. I make $2-3.
Yeah.
So from early on, it was like, yo, you do a couple things, you make some money, and I like the feeling.
Yes.
And then as I got older, it was like, all right, like mom and dad they're not gonna keep giving you money. You know, you wanna be fly, you wanna get clothes, you wanna do stuff, and I don't like to be told no. So from there, my dad thought he was punishing me by making me cut the grass.
Right.
I cut my grass. Next thing you know, I'm cutting a neighbor's yard. Next thing you know, another neighbor asked me to cut grass. So from 12 to basically 21, 22, I had a landscaping business where I was cutting all the grass in my community. And that's what helped put me through college.
Wow.
Pay for like 2 proms. And then in the interim of that, I learned again about business the hard way. Like, yo, depending on what your business is, you got to figure out how to float in seasons, landscaping seasonal.
Right.
So from there, I started selling CDs from, again, hanging out in my community. The CD man, I seen what he was doing. So I'm taking CDs to schools before the internet was popping, and I'm killing them. You know, I could sell CDs. Now I'd added white T-shirts. And then I learned how to be a barber in college because, again, your business, you'll learn the market shift. You got to shift. So by the time I'm a junior, now they download and streaming music. I can't sell CDs. So then I learned, yo, I could cut hair. I learned how to do 3 haircuts. That was it. I wasn't even good. But on campus, what I tell you, in college, it don't take much to be successful. You just need to show up and do the work.
I'm in
college cutting hair, doing baldies. People can't get off campus, so they need me. If it's a need, I'm going to figure it out and find out how to make myself available for it. So that took me till I was about 1920. My cousin gave me a book called Rich Dad, Poor Dad. I read it.
Let's go.
You know, it was a rap after Rich Dad, Poor Dad.
Yeah.
But the thing that really was the key for me was the exposure. He pulled up in a Maserati one day, and I'm trying to figure out, did I miss something? Did you hit the lotto? What's going on? You start selling drugs, doing something illegal. Did you win a case with a lawyer? He like, nah. He showed me. He's like, oh, I got a job. I bought these 3 houses. I used that money to pay car note on the Maserati.
Wow.
I said, you bought houses that pay you? I said, how that makes sense? We live in a house and don't nobody pay us. He said, once you read this book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, you understand it's 2 sides of the coin. You either buy stuff that you pay for or you buy stuff that other people pay you for. And from there, I start networking in college, finding all the real estate events. I'm the young person in the room. I'm helping clean up trash, setting up the room. I just go to all the events I can. Rich Dad, Fan, Merrill, you name it. I'm going wherever networking event I get. I'm leaving campus.
Yeah.
So I did that. I tried to follow the path that, you know, my mom's go to college, get a job. I did that. I ended up failing academic probation. I picked a major sports medicine. It wasn't what I really wanted to do.
Gotcha.
I switched to education. Next thing you know, in education, I'm like, man, this ain't enough money, even though I don't really got no bills, no kids, but this ain't it. And I don't want to be sitting in the classroom all day. It drives me crazy.
Yes.
You know, and I see some of the people getting burnt out. So for me, I took a job basically being a trash man.
Okay.
It was good money, but they don't tell you in real life, newest person on the team, also first person fired.
First person to let go. Yeah, absolutely.
Man, I got fired 2012, January 1st.
Wow.
I said from there, I never will let somebody dictate my future and my income.
Wow.
So from there,
started off the year with being fired.
We came back from the break. We had 3 days off. We show up to work 7 a.m. They say, yo, Anthony, I need to speak to you, but leave your keys. Oh, I need to warm my truck up. That's what I do when I come in. Warm my truck up.
Right.
They like, no, not right now. Come with me to the office. Oh, they don't come to the office no 7 in the morning.
Right.
They like, we got to talk to you. And now the big boss come too. Big boss don't never come.
That don't feel right.
Look, they talking about you could stay for today though, because you're here. You could stay and finish your day. And y'all want me to finish my day and y'all let me go. I'm supposed to look around with the salty face. So,
right.
Bro, from that point on, I turned up with my landscaping business for about 3 years. I did that full time. Gotcha. And then I went and got my real estate license through networking. Somebody pulled my coattail, a good friend of mine, and he said, yo, get your real estate license. And basically from there, I started out as a wholesaler. And then that wasn't really for me. That wasn't really my thing. You also, I feel like you got to learn to try certain things and figure out what's for you. But don't be scared to pivot if it's not for you. Don't keep beating your head into the wall if it's not for you. Like, try something else. So you could be a realtor. You could be a wholesaler. You could not do none of that and just buy the houses, whatever it is. But there's a lane for you. Figure out what works for you. So from there, I became a realtor. Next thing you know, I used my real estate license to teach me how to do real estate. I sold, let me back up too. So I struggled with my real estate license, actually. My struggle was I failed the test 10 times.
Wow. Okay.
For me, it was like, is this really for me? But also in the middle of that, I had just moved out my mom's house. So it was like, I can't go back, and nor can I tell her I'm betting on me.
Right.
And I'm going to keep doing this. And I moved out. You know, mom was like, don't go nowhere. You know, you better go get a job. I said, nope, yeah. Not me.
Right.
So, you know, I finally passed. But I basically, from that point that I passed, I've been selling hundreds of houses every year. Every year I've been networking and using my license to make money to help me learn how to invest.
Yes.
So that's how I met my hard money lender. That's how I met contractors. Next thing you know, I help everybody else. They start pouring into me. I help them some more. They pour into me. Now I got enough to do it all, not on my own, but basically build my situation how I wanted to.
I love it. I think there's so many key things that we can pull out of that. But one being that you knew it was in you early, right? I think the one thing my father used to have take me around and have him paint houses. So we would paint interior and exteriors of homes. And I would be like, why are we doing this hard work? Like, there's got to be a better way. Why are we working this hard? And then he would break me off like $150. You know, I'm 10, 12 years old. It's like $150. I'm like, wait a minute. If you giving me $150, how much did you get?
And that's right? Pretty good giving you
exactly. Exactly. And so one of the things that I love about your story is that you kept going towards it because that early seed that was planted with the Maserati. Right. You knew something was there with this license. So we fast forward and now you're selling homes and you're helping people all over Philly and that area. What's the cautionary tale? Right. Because everybody jumps into real estate, especially right now, especially on Instagram. Everybody wants to be a realtor. It's like the luxury job, you know, because I could get dressed. I can show myself in front of millions of homes. What's the cautionary tale that people should know before they jump into this industry?
So from the realtor standpoint.
Yes.
So from the realtor standpoint, you have to understand that you're not going to make money right away. So for me, I say I was fortunate because I already was networking and had a group of contacts that were like my support and my network of doing business with. So like, I think in any business that you start, you have to figure out again, like college, who's your tribe and do these people trust you? Because no matter what you do, these are the people that's always going to support you, whether they actually buy from you or send you a referral. Those are going to be the key things to help you thrive and get going. Those referrals is what got me started in the beginning.
Right.
And really, once I help one person, social media is the cheat code. Most people be like, I only sold one house. No, that one house on social media looks like 10 houses to the people who know you or don't know you. So right. I took that, used a little promo on Facebook. Now somebody else from college called me like, Aunt, I remember you. Remember you used to cut my hair. I want to buy a house too. I got a job. Hey, yes. I'm your guy.
I love it.
You know, whatever you got to do. So, I mean, outside of that, it's just, you know, think about what the purpose is as well. Like, what's the end goal? Don't just become a real estate agent thinking it's about the money, because that was my initial hiccup. I knew I was going to use it to network, but I didn't necessarily have a plan. So, you know, I feel like knowing what I know now, being an agent is the stepping stone to what the bigger goal is. But you need to know what the bigger goal is, or else you'll just be selling houses for years and years to come.
Right.
And for me, at this point in my game, like, I know I got a window I'm trying to hit. so that I don't have to sell houses anymore.
Wow. So that leads me perfectly to my next question, because one of the posts that you did on Instagram, I tell you, I'll be honest, I had to watch it like four times to catch what you were saying. Talk to me about this 30K in 30 days. Talk me through this process and how we make that happen, because it is a real thing. It is possible. So 30,000 in 30 days. Let's go.
So real estate, again, the exposure it has allowed me to have, it showed me that, like we talked about, the cheat code, whether it's business or whatever, I feel like in life that they didn't teach us in college or high school, is having decent credit and being being financially bankable.
Gotcha. Okay.
So I think that we'll that, clean
it. They trust you with your money.
right. Financially worthy, trustworthy, all that good stuff. So
yes,
I learned early on that the banks were giving me money, but I was utilizing it wrong. So early on, when I first got that job, credit union said, hey, we'll give you a personal line of credit. So, you know, me being young, I'm thinking I'm supposed to use that line of credit to go buy Gucci, go to the bars, happy hours, and, you know, have fun. Not, you don't realize, like, you know, that money's due back
right
at some point. But knowing what I know now, if you're a person that has a regular job or whatever your situation is, but if you at least have some type of decent credit, no tricks, literally just go to the credit unions in your community and neighborhood and apply for either personal credit cards or personal line of credits. But the thing is, if you take the time to do the research and find out if this credit union and that credit union pull from Experian, that credit union pulls from TransUnion, and that one pulls from TransUnion, you can hit the banks in the same day, and now you don't got to worry about all these inquiries because they're pulling from the same place. So in my neighborhood, Univest and Bryn Mawr Trust both pull from Experian. So if I do the application online on the same device, it's one inquiry, but for two institutions because they pull from the same place. So now if I get approved for 10 and 10, that's literally a 10-minute piece of paper I filled out, and I got 20,000. Then if I use my other credit part, my TransUnion from somebody else, that 20, I do it again. That 20 turns into 40 or turns into 30. Yeah. But I use the number 30 because I feel like for most people, 30 grand is enough cushion to do some type of business transaction, preferably real estate.
Yes.
And use the line of credit to also pay for the transaction till the transaction makes you money.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's strong. I the part that you know, it took me a while to figure out is putting them all together for the same transaction, right? So once you, let's say this works, you do $30,000-$40,000 in a week or two, right? From all the different credit unions. Mm-hmm. Should you have your pre-qualification set up before you go do that? Or should you go do that and then go get your pre-qualification?
So I would do it probably 90 days prior. So what will happen is, let's just say, if you know your goal is to do real estate, most banks are lending people, they want to see 2 months worth of bank statements.
Yes.
So if you do it 30 days, well, basically 90 days out, you got 30 days to get the money, let the money sit, and now the next 2 months, that money's been sitting in the bank.
Right.
So now you basically got 2 months worth of bank statements, and you just take enough for how much you're willing to risk.
Wait, we just lost the sound. All right, something about these technicals, they don't want us to give you these knowledge, ladies and gentlemen. They don't want us to give you this game. So go ahead and pick it up. You said you let the money sit for 90 days, shows vesting.
Right. So we were at the, so basically the first 30 days you use that to get the money, next 60 days you let it sit. In Philadelphia, you can just say if you're going to buy a decent house, 200 to 250. Yes. I'm just going to say you're going to use first-time home buyer loans, so you're going to have like a minimum down payment. Just say you need $10,000. So out of that money you took out, you know, $10,000 is sitting in the bank account. Maybe you want to give yourself a little cushion for whatever, so you make it 15. You let it sit, and now that's the money you're going to now show the bank on how you're basically going to pay for the purchase of this property or this investment. So most people, they're going to be like, oh, they don't want you to use the, you know, they don't want you to borrow money to go borrow more money.
Right.
Again, as long as your other debts and all that other stuff is cool, you'll still qualify for the loan. They will count the payments for the money you took out.
Yes.
But again, that goal is, it's okay, because that money, as long as you're still making profit from, if you're renting that property out or you're renting, like you live in one room, rent the other rooms out, however you're doing it, you know, as long as it still cash flows, you just need to get a stepping stone.
Right.
You know, people be like, well, my first deal, I'm not making a lot of money. You're probably not on the first one. It's okay. You, what you're doing here is you're learning the process.
Yes.
You're setting yourself up, but now also you're in the game. I didn't start getting the help that I get now until I got in the game. It's easy to talk about what you want to do, but it's a difference when you say, hey, this is what I want to do and this is what I've done. And they can help you now bridge the gap to those next steps because you've actually done the work.
Yeah.
So you're really, you don't go buy a bad deal, but thing is, you're not going to get rich on the first one. So if you're okay with making some money and getting in position, look, the first deal, I went from buying one house a year for like 3 years. Then my fourth year, I went crazy. I bought 4 houses in 1 year.
Yes.
And then I got stuck for 2 years, though. I got stuck not knowing the other steps. I just knew I wanted to buy all these houses. And then I got stuck not knowing what I didn't know. But right. Then when I got stuck, it put me in position, you know, and now it's to the point where, like, as long as the deals are right, I can pretty much buy and fund my deals. So right now, from my struggles, I went from, like I said, one, I bought four. I struggled, didn't buy nothing for 2 years. And then out of nowhere, now this year, that basically 2021,
yeah,
I purchased 2 single families, 1 duplex, and I'm currently waiting to go to closing for a 6-unit right now just for this year alone.
That's what I'm talking about. So let me ask you, what have you found to be the biggest barriers to entry for people that want to be real estate investors? Is it the credit, the money, or the knowledge of the opportunity itself?
So the funny thing is, it's all of the above. So I feel like most of us, we're getting in this game because we're thinking it's going to be the thing to save us. And I'll be the first one to tell you, I make more money now with less than when I had more. So for me, my struggle was in the beginning, I wanted to do all these super cool things, right? Which is possible. But however, I didn't want to slow down all the other things I had going on so that I could actually reap the benefits of the things that I planned on doing.
Right.
So, you know, I'm flipping houses, I'm being an agent, but none of it's changing my life because I got all these bills and I'm constantly doing all these things that I didn't have no business doing.
Wow.
So in that interim of me slowing down in them 2 years and fixing some stuff, I was able basically to wipe away all my personal debt. Only debt I carry is a personal credit card and now my student loans. That's it.
Wow.
And but now that I'm telling you, I'm doing less deals than what I was doing back then, but I'm making more money because I don't have all these bills. So I think the biggest barrier to entry is personal debt. If you can get rid of your personal debt or make it manageable, you'll be able to grow twice as fast. So like I was using that money trying to pay down the debt before I got rid of it. So the money never made my life change. So then when I had gaps, I had to figure out, do I pay some of this debt or do I feed myself today? So I got to make choices. And that's a hard way to manage a business.
Yes. Yeah.
And I mean, if you can, so like I said, if you can, like people say, yo, get 6 months of income. No, that's real talk. Like, no, don't think you don't need it. No, you need it.
Yeah.
So it's like, yo, that's 6 months, even if it's only 3, but whatever it is you're doing, 9 to 5, no 9 to 5. If you can set up these, literally all these different accounts, you want to be able to pay your rent, your mortgage. You want to be able to pay your car and just separate it. You have to separate it and be disciplined, because if not, again, you'll be robbing Peter to pay Paul. And next thing you know, Paul will be coming right back around and you'll never advance.
Yeah. I tell all of my clients, my listeners, I tell everybody, it is very expensive to be broke and poor, right? Because, and I never say that to be, you know, it sounds funny. I sound like I'm clowning. But the reason that I say that is because people don't understand, or they choose to ignore maybe, how much interest they're paying on their credit cards, right? Like you pay that minimum payment and it's taking you 7 years to pay off $12,000 because you keep giving them $50, right? Like, and then the interest on that, the you stretch the terms out, man. It's so expensive. Late fees and reconnection fees. And
so let me share, right?
Yes.
When you talk about that credit card situation, I had a credit card, I own Bank of America, like $7,000.
Okay.
The fact that they gave me $7,000, So last year or the year before last, I paid that card off in full finally. I had this card since 2014, 15.
Wow.
Do you know they cut my card because I paid them off in full?
Oh, my God. Yeah. Because I was not going to make no interest on him.
I was a loyal. And that's when it clicked again that I'm only a loyal customer when they're making money off me.
Yep.
But now all my other credit cards, like I said, I have them, but I'm using them only to make me money. So like now I use credit cards. I got two credit cards I really use, my Amex, and I got this Navy Federal Credit Union card I use.
Love it.
I use them to get my reward points to deal with my personal expenses on a daily basis. Every month, I pay them on the 1st, the 15th, and the 30th. My real estate checks come in. You start paying them. End of the month, it's paid in full. They love it because I'm constantly using it, I'm constantly paying it. But now I'm paying myself with the rewards. So we stay at hotels. We get to do different cool things. Amazon points. I go to CVS. I don't never got paid for nothing because I got so many points.
Yes.
You know, but it's a gift. It's a different game, again, when you go to the other side. Yeah. But, you know, again, when I was just paying that $30, $40, it's like, yo, I know I paid them. And then I look up. The late fee didn't hit because I owe more money again.
And the bill is bigger. It's the craziest thing. I'm about to throw them under the bus. City did the same thing to me. I paid them off. I paid them off in full. And they cut my available credit, whatever it was, they cut it in half. So now it's like $8,000 instead of the $6,000. I'm like, what? Wait a minute. I just gave y'all. And they were like, due to circumstances in the financial
world. They come up with these crazy stories. Yeah.
So I'm similar. Chase and Amex. Those are my go-tos.
Okay.
But I've been watching you though. So I'm about to hit up some of these credit unions that are around here soon. Cause they seem to, besides that they're local, they seem to understand the barrier to entry game too. And they want to build their portfolio, it seems like.
Well, so that's why we picked the small community banks and the credit unions, because again, they're supposed to be there for the community. So they have to allocate this money. Nice. So, you know, and that's why I tell people, if you know what to do with the money the right way. So again, that first line of credit, I didn't know what to do with it. Now that I know what to do with it, that's a safety net that I use. So like, I literally can take that line of credit every month.
Yeah.
Pay my personal bills for the month, mortgage, car note, whatever I need to pay. But now when my money comes in, I pay it off in full. Don't take my money, do nothing else with it. That check, when it come in, it just sit. So now whatever bills I had, I paid a line of credit back. But now again, I paid my bills already. So I ain't even tripping for the rest of the month.
Love it.
You know, so again, it's a game changer because the stresses I used to have because this bill's due on the 1st, the 3rd, the 5th. But I was taking that money and putting it places that wasn't doing nothing for me. So, again, it's a game changer when you learn how to use the bank's money to go to work for you.
Oh, man, that's a game right there. So I love your IG account because often you actually walk people through your investment properties and show them what they should be looking for to make it a good investment or a bad investment. How has that, one, helped your business? But two, are you learning while you're teaching? Right.
Why you're showing literally people? Took the thought out of my head.
I love it. Yeah, because I was watching. I can't remember which video it was, but you were talking about I think it was an interior and it was downstairs. You were showing a wall or floor or something. And you were talking about what to look for, mold, different things under. So walk me through that, knowing what's a good investment, you know, whether you're going to flip or, you know, get tenants or whatever the case is.
Well, so for me, doing the Instagram stuff, it keeps me accountable. I'll definitely say that because, like you said, I'll have these conversations. Somebody will be like, yo, you ain't showed us new houses. I'm like, I didn't know I was supposed to, but like, all right, I got you. So now it's like, it keeps me conscious. Like, yo, you're helping people appreciate this because, again, you don't realize how many people don't necessarily have this opportunity or go out and create the opportunity. So it's like, I want to expose my community, my friends and family to what the possibilities are, because like I said, it's not rocket science, honestly. Yeah. Like when I tell you I didn't almost flunked out of college, failed my real estate test 10 times. I'm telling you, it's not rocket science. You just got to put the people in front of you that know what they're doing and y'all build them relationships. They'll take you where you need to go.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like I go in these houses and, you know, basically we're going to figure out good, bad, or indifferent. And again, me being an agent, going to every home inspection for my clients, I was able to learn about good things and properties and bad things even before I started rehabbing them. You know, so the simple things like cast iron plumbing versus PVC, radiator heat versus central air. These are the things that you think about when you go in these properties, what makes them, some of them high end, some of them just, you know, affordable or low end per se. Right.
Right.
So, you know, the social media part is, it's kind of that one, that accountability for me. And then two, it just creates the opportunity to be able to expose people to what is out here. And also to show people it's not intimidating at all.
Yeah.
It's really not. It's only intimidating because you might not know right away. But hey, like you said, if you go through my page, there's enough information to show you the basics to understand electrical, plumbing, HVAC, sheetrock, you know, hardwood floor versus the vinyl plank, you know, granite countertops versus the basic countertops, all that good stuff.
Oh man, my wife perks up whenever she talks about countertops. It's a whole thing. When we built this house, I don't even remember what kind we ended up getting, but there's so many options. Anyway, okay.
I was getting ready to say, of course, level one, level two.
Listen, all I know is that when she was in the design center, I left, right?
Oh, that's when you messed up. That's when you messed up because she, you know, you try and keep it in budget. You just said, listen, I ain't even fighting that battle.
I was going to lose because my thing is, you know, I'm not the smartest tool in the shed, right? But I understand game hustle. Add-ons, like I get that part, right? So I'm like, all of this stuff is cheaper aftermarket. I understand that you want it, you know, ready to move in, but it's cheaper aftermarket. So let's just
thousands get of dollars the house, cheaper.
Right? Like wiring the ceiling for a chandelier, for them to do it is $9,000. For somebody else to come in, it's like $250 and a six pack. You know what I mean? So it was a battle that I wasn't going to win. So we settled on a number and I was like, if you go over this number, call me, right? And tell me what you're doing it for. Maybe, you know, cause happy wife, right? So we'll talk about it, but I left cause I could, and they so smooth with it.
Smart man. And like you said, the smooth part, they don't force you. They're not like the old school salesman. It's like, how does this feel? What does this look like in the sunlight to you?
Yes.
I think I do like that. I didn't know I liked it, but I like it.
Exactly. Exactly. Now you go to your friend's house and you judging their countertops and everything. It's a whole thing.
So I will say that is like one of my things now. I try to turn my realtor hat off. Mm. So when I'm not going to lie, I'm that friend that is, I'm judging the things I didn't used to care about. Now I'm judging it on cleanliness. I'm judging it on is these the shaker cabinets from 2005 or the shaker cabinets from 2018? You know,
I love it.
Are these the ones that self-close or do they just slam?
It's a whole thing. I love it. So let me ask you this, because you alluded to it a little bit earlier. A lot of people get into the industry and they study, you know, they study the aesthetics of the industry. They think that, you know, I get to be a realtor, I get to be a real estate investor, and I'm going to make all this money. And they study the industry, they learn different loans and different opportunities and things like that. How much time have you spent studying your people skills and what's that done for your business?
Ooh, that's a good one. That's a good one. So I'll say early on, I didn't know I was studying my people skills, right?
Okay.
So initially, I'm naturally like, I want to be with the people. That's just me. Like, I love interaction. COVID drove me crazy initially because we can't be in groups and bring that energy.
Right. Can't shake hands and kiss babies.
Yes. Listen, and I'm a hugger. I'm a hugger. I'm that guy. So, you know, dap you up. What's up?
Yes.
You know, so for me, I've been reading books, and again, wasn't until I got to college I didn't understand how important reading was.
Okay.
So like developing people skills is everything because this business or any business you're in is about trust.
Yes.
People really will buy anything you sell almost whether they need it or don't need it because they trust and like you.
Yes.
So for me, I've spent thousands of dollars, hours of different education in different forms because it's not always direct sales. Sometimes it's just communication. body language, reading people. But the game changer for me, understanding people and being more compassionate and patient, came from me being a father and a husband, honestly. For me, having kids taught me multiple things in regards to, one, not holding grudges, two, having to always learn to be patient, because your kids wake up every day and tell you they love you. They don't care what you did the night before, sent them to bed early. They're going to still love you and be excited to see you. So I took that method and used it in my marriage and in life to say, whatever happened yesterday doesn't matter. Today's a new day. Look, we can move. We can agree to disagree, but we got to move forward. That approach has helped me, you know, be able to be more patient with people from all kind of walks of life. So I can have a disagreement with you about something crazy, but I won't. I do my best not to internalize it. And then also in regards to that personal development piece. And I think this is key for people in general, but even more Black males, because we talked about not knowing how to effectively communicate, let alone control our emotions, the good and the bad that comes with the emotions. And, you know, it's always been that stigma, just be strong no matter what, hold it down. Nah, forget that. That's how you get stressful. That's why we die early. That's why we got high blood pressure. That's why, you know, we be having gray hair and you be like 24, like, dog, like, man, listen, what's going
on? They're starting to come in. They coming in aggressively.
Literally, I found like three over here and the long one is one in here. And I'm just like, I talk my barber. He's like, you had those. I thought you knew. I'm like, he's like, don't worry. But to my point, therapy, going to therapy, not just going to therapy more so because something's wrong, but therapy just to release and better yourself. So people, again, when we're studying people, the people I look up to as far as like just famous people, Diddy, Jay-Z, Rick Ross, different guys in the industry and music or celebrities, all of them had these key components that what they said made them successful. And I tried them, you know, so a lot of the guys I study in some of the books of being a millionaire in different books and in different things that I like, they got a wife. So that right there shows the discipline. And being able to focus, because I don't know too many successful people that are out in the streets, you know, whining, dining, mingling and you know, that costs money and time. And if you're focused on your goal, you don't have time for all of that. Right. So, you know, being able to lock in on that, and then the therapy piece of really dealing with those internal things. So like I touched on the finance part to it about me dealing with my finances early, well, in the interim of me trying to grow.
Yes.
But my finances were a reflection of my internal personal feelings for myself or how I was looking at life. And going to therapy has helped me understand why I can be impulsive at times, why I want to buy certain things, why I felt like I needed this to feel this way. And it wasn't because of that. It was really because of this from something from my childhood.
Wow. Wow.
And you go to therapy and realize it ain't that bad, but really it's only that bad because you don't talk about it.
If you don't talk about it. Yeah. It's funny. My mentor used to tell me that, you know, he got me early on. He said, Chuck, listen, you got great vision. You got great ambition. You hustler, somebody give you the play, you'll run it. He said, but your money will never grow past the level of your personal growth. So the way that you see yourself, the way that you see your money, he said, you have great external vision. You need to work on you. It took me about 6 years to understand what he was saying, you know, because I wake up every morning and I tell myself I'm the greatest thing walking, right? So I'm like, I'm good. I work on me. Like, do you see this? You know, but to your point, you know, having the wife, having the girls, it makes you want to be better, right? And then as a reflection of being better, you learn to manage their emotions by managing your own, right? You're able to listen a little bit more, and then you can take those into business. You can take those, you know, those thoughts of, okay, this isn't personal. This is just a bad day. So this deal isn't dead. It's just, you know, right now might not be the time for us to talk about it. So I love that. And then also that you talked about therapy, because I think that that's something that, you know, obviously we know that there's a stigma for Black men and doing that. But I will say, if you study wealth, everybody has either strong religious beliefs or strong therapy, you know, or sometimes both. So yeah, I'm a fan of copying the right cat, you know, I'm a fan of copying the right
cat. Smart man.
I'm trying. So I'm old enough to know that real estate industry washes itself out, right? Every 10 or 15 years. So you were mentioning you got in around 2012. So that's right after the downturn of 08. How do you suggest new realtors prepare themselves should the market kind of wash themselves out? You know, those vanity realtors.
So, I mean, it goes back to what we talked about earlier. Those disciplines are putting that money in a bucket. So not living above your means and being able to have a nest egg of, you know, 3 months, 6 months worth of income just to support the droughts. And I mean, early on for me, I had plenty of droughts. Like, it'd be like, man, I have a good 2-3 months. I'd be rolling. Like, I'm the man.
Yes.
And then it'd be like, here come a good 4 or 5 months. And I'm about to start filling out some job applications to hold me over.
You say, you know, Little Caesars might not be that bad.
Well, so again, I tell people, for me, that's why I'm always thankful to at least have my degree.
Yeah.
So I had to pivot in 2016 when I had my first son.
Okay.
And I had to go back. No, no, no. 2014 and pivot. And I went back and got a social work job. So while I was working social work, I was working real estate at the same time.
Okay.
So in that interim of them 2 years that I got stuck with them four houses that I was working on, I was working on my personal finances to be bankable, my personal credit and my debt. Yeah. But meanwhile, I'm still hustling my craft with the real estate and still doing what I'm doing. So whenever all of this works itself out, the momentum pushed me. So that momentum pushed me and it got me to a point. In 2016, I went back full time. I was able to quit February of 2016. It was so to the point, it was so decent because I gave my job 30-day notice. I didn't even get them 2-week notice. I gave them 30. This time I gave them 30 days. You know,
I love it.
You know, I said I could be here, I could leave. It's up to y'all, but right. I want to let you know this around this time is my last day.
Yeah, I love that. I think, you know, we do a lot of entrepreneurs on the show. We do a lot of thought leaders, but I never tell anybody, you know, you should never quit your 9-to-5 while you're building, because for me at least, one, medical benefits, two. If you're responsible with your finances, it funds the business, right? That's how you get your debt to income ratio down. That's how you get, you know, access to the different credit unions because they see the job, they see the incomes coming in, right? So I tell everybody, you know, you can hate the job all you want. Don't quit and don't let them know you hate it. You know, build something up, build those 6 months of reserves that you were talking about. So we're getting close to wrapping up. So you can probably tell one of my end games is to invest in real estate at a very large clip. But I'll honestly say I'm at the beginning stages. So what would you suggest for listeners like myself? You know, California and Philly, obviously a different market. You know, for $250 out here is probably a one room apartment. You know, it's probably a front room, you know, maybe a kitchen. I don't know. And that's not to knock, you know, just markets are different everywhere.
Different,
right?
Markets. Yeah.
So, but as far as investing, would you suggest going out of state to invest just to get it up and running? Or would you suggest, you know, staying home where you can see the property, touch it, you know, it's there, you know, they're not throwing Airbnb parties in it, you know?
So for me, I have control issues. I'm still working on it. So I'm going to always say I'm staying local. I've tried to venture out and I've went and visited places and said, hey, we could do this. I like this. But then by the time I drive home or however we get home, my anxiety kicks up and I'm like, can I really trust this person or what are the what ifs? So that's more so something I got to work on.
Yeah.
However, I'll say people who are already in motion and doing different things, I think another way to get in the game that I didn't learn, you have the money.
Yeah.
Find somebody who needs the money and still invest in real estate. So, for example, I work with people who have 9-to-5s or do something else other than real estate, but they have an interest in real estate and they have the money. So I'll literally take their money. Well, they'll give me their money, rather. I'll use it to do my deals okay. and give them a return on their money, which they won't get in the bank within 8 to 12 months. So you're investing in real estate passively. And when we talk about what do the banks do, they lend the money. We as people can lend the money in our own communities for business adventures. You just need to vet the people and make sure that they're trustworthy and that they have a proven system. You know, so it took me some time to get to that point, but that was one of the other things that I was able to scale other than having the bank money. I have people who trust me and they like me and they see what I'm doing. And it's like, hey, Anthony, when's your next project? I got 30,000. I got 50,000.
Yeah.
I can't, especially in the, I can't sit it in the bank. I need to move it.
Right.
So, you know, so now if you take that money, you're now learning without you having to do the work. At the end of the day, they got to pay you back your money. Even if you didn't get your profit, I'm saying if everything goes bad and you got your money back, you had a learning experience and you still can be whole.
So do you get your money back by putting a lien on the property once it's closed, or how does that process work?
Well, so everybody's process is different. So for me personally, what I do with my partners, my clients, is that we do promissory notes. So we don't lien it to the property because the mortgage goes first. But we do have promissory notes and securities in place so that they're aware of what is at stake, what everything is. And then we have a timeline.
Gotcha.
So, you know, everybody I've lended to me in the last 3 years has all been paid back in full and all gotten their returns as promised.
I love it. I love it. You got an event coming up.
Yes.
Let's talk about that in Philly.
Right. So we have the next event, we're kicking off 2022, myself and my partner, Lorenzo Jackson. So a group that I created because of the pandemic of feeling like I was basically boxed in.
Yes.
So we started meeting online on Thursdays doing interviews called Instagram Live Interviews, The Investment Blueprint. So every Thursday at 8:30 p.m. Okay. we do them. But that transcended into basically live events where we're teaching people now. They'll go through properties, three properties in three phases. You got the property in a shell when it's demoed, basically just all brick.
Yeah.
Then we'll take you to a property that's framed up so you can see the plumbing, electric, HVAC, heaters, all of it exposed. And then we'll take you to a finished product so you can see what it looks like pretty. And once you see it, it takes the fear and the barrier out of, oh, this is what's behind these walls, or this is what a bad house looks like. They all look bad when you take the prettiness out.
Yes.
But it's nothing but, you know, like Lego pieces, plug and play. And then from there, we're going to teach you the rehab process. We're going to teach you business credit. And then we're also going to teach you how to plug and play, whether you want to do fix and flips or whether you want to do buy and hold investments. For me, I honestly got in the game initially because I wanted to be a landlord, like you said, and I wanted to have X amount of properties.
Yes.
Now in this business, I've realized, again, because of my money management, I don't need a lot of properties. I only need a certain amount of properties because I don't have a lot of debt. And that allows me to, you know, basically not have to manage as many houses. I'm not a person that I don't think I want 100 doors anymore.
Yeah.
I just need a certain amount of income coming in every month to cover that. And I'm cool. And then the game changer is, honestly, you probably could do one flip a year. And depending on what your 9-to-5 is, I'm saying the average person that's making 30, 40, 50,000,
yes.
you can do one flip a year and keep your 9-to-5 and just be and still live a comfortable life.
Yeah.
But imagine you flip a house every June and you get that check for 50 grand.
Love
you
it.
Buy it in December, January, you flip it and sell it by June. That's just one house a year. Then imagine now you take that money, you buy one rental, one flip, one rental, one flip. In a 3-4-year, 5-year span, you like, I could quit my job or I could stay at my job. And now I got money for kids' college. Now I got money to take the kids to Disney. Now I got money to, you know, pay my debt off. But again, it's just structuring it and keeping it simple. So we have this event. It's going to be January 23rd in Philadelphia. I'll send you the link so you can drop it in the comments as well.
Absolutely.
It's one of our paid events that we do, but we'll basically give you lunch, breakfast. And again, we're going to give you all the tools you'll need to basically run your business like a CEO and not like a hustler.
Love it. I love it. Yeah. You got to be careful with that brunch word because the women come out for brunch and the mimosas kick in and they don't care about the real estate no more. It's a whole different thing. It's funny. I was going to ask you if you had to pick a side, which one would you do? Would it be fix and flip or would it be long-term hold?
Ooh, so that's tough. That is. And you want to know why it's tough? Fundamentally, buy and hold is hands down the best play to wealth. And yes. I'll say this and I'll make it short, where buy and hold is the best because it pays you over and over again. You get paid every month.
Yep.
You get paid when you refinance it, you know, and then not to mention the tax benefits every year, every year, you know. But then with flipping, that check, that when it's right, listen, listen, when it's right, can't nobody tell you nothing. And the funniest thing about getting that check, so I'm the agent and I'm the flipper. So when I come to settlement, they want to know where my client is. And normally I'm the young black guy.
Yeah.
So they're like, who are you? So I'll play dumb like, oh, I'm the investor. Then they'll be like, well, is your agent coming?
I don't know.
I'll wait 10, 15 minutes and be like, I am my agent.
That's hilarious. I love it. If you guys are listening on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, you got to see the face that Anthony made when he said, when this check is right, because I think that face is literally why we get into this business, right? It's like, y'all don't understand. It's like, oh, this money is, and it's not even about the money. It's being able to put together a play where you can play Monopoly in real life, right? Where you can literally learn rules to wealth, learn about having a skill that's half functional, right? You have to have technical knowledge, but the other half is just being able to be in the game and watching it happen. And I'll tell anybody, buying a house is probably the most stressful thing you'll ever do. But once you're able to understand the process and the emotions of it and that check come in, man, listen.
Nah, so like you said, and that excitement I get, right, is because now I'm thinking about what I got locked in for next year already, right?
Yeah.
So, and it's like knowing that is like, again, everything has seasons, but good, bad, or indifferent, when you start realizing it's plug and play, life is literally plug and play. It's 12 months to a year. Knowing that the skill that I have or the opportunities from, you know, networking and being a creator, it's the not a question of, can I do it? It's when I'll do it.
Mm.
And that feeling right there, when I tell you, well, if you're going to go to therapy, now the conversations are different. It's not about the stress, the bills. Now it's about, yeah, doc, I drove past the Benz dealer, or, hey, doc, I bought my kids a giraffe just because, like, did your kids need it? He said he wanted it. What did he want me to do?
I love it.
So that it just puts that peace of mind, I feel like, especially for men or people who are providing for their family, female, single, you know, married.
Yeah.
When you see the plan come together, your conversations are different. The family dynamics are different. And now, again, it's not about, well, babe, we got to get out of this, we got to do that. Nah, we need to do this. Can you help me do this? What do you need me to do?
Yeah.
And at this point, we'll meet here and we'll be here.
Oh, man, that's so perfect segue, right? Because perfect segue. And we're getting close to wrapping up. I know the people are like, oh, my God, this is a great conversation, but it's almost an hour. So here's my question. In most marriages, right, there's one visionary and there's one practical person. Right. So I can tell that you are the person that's vision. You're like, oh, my God, baby, we can do this. We can do this. We can do all these things. And all I got to do. But tell me the wife is your wife like mine, where she's like, OK, baby, but XYZ, ABs, like she's pins and tails and, you know, making sure every I has got it. How does that go?
So, yes. Yeah, so for me, I kind of got the double-edged sword. So I'm the cross the T's, dot the I's, and the visionary. However, it took me a minute to get to the point where my wife would actually understand what I'm talking about. Because, you know, I'm a visionary. So I just get excited and I go on a tangent. I'm like, you see what I'm talking about, baby? You see it?
We can do it.
Yes. Right. I'm like, you see it? She's like, bring it back. So for me, I had to start taking her to the houses, you know, and being open with the finances to show her, this is what I mean when this is the vision, or this is my favorite right here. I keep this on my desk with me.
Okay.
Babe, this is what we're going to get. This is what we're gonna get. The Monopoly money right here.
Yes.
I kid you. Look, babe. If we do this, this is what comes out of the house. This is what comes out of this rental. This is what we're doing. So, to your point, I am the visionary. My wife is the person that you got to show her the plan, be detailed. So that also makes me slow down to make sure I ironed it all the way out. But she's going to have 30 questions. And honestly, that's the part that frustrates me because I'm like, did you not? What are all these questions for? I just told you.
I just gave you the vision.
Hey. Problem is, I gave you A and D. I didn't tell you what B and C was. So now I know. Man. A, just like I talked to my investors, A, B, C, D, and she's willing to rock and work with me. So to your point, we just actually did our first business venture together. We're actually getting ready to start a personal home care business.
Nice.
So when I talk about the opportunities are endless with real estate, imagine me. I know how to buy properties with my eyes closed.
Yeah.
But now I put a business in there that's a cash cow. You talk about making one. I'm just take one house. You make $1,500 a month.
Yep.
Now take that same 3-bedroom house and you make $1,500 a month per person.
Let's go.
How many houses at that point do you need to live the lifestyle you want?
7. I know. Look, I'm doing that math quick.
Just that easy, right?
7, yes.
But now again, the conversation's different. Like, honey, if we can maintain, do this, do that, give us a window, babe. You can do, you look, I don't care if you want to chase birds and, you know, sell stuff on a home shopping network. Yes. But if we get this, we now can do that.
You now can do that. I think that it's important for couples, whether you're married or not, if you're committed to each other and you guys can share a vision, it's important to, one, make sure that you have that conversation, but two, be able to show small wins along the process, right? Because I tell my young guys, you know, I tell them that she's only going to be in love with the ambition for so long, right? She's only going to love potential for so long. You have to be able to show some results. And I think that was the hardest part of being a visionary early on in my relationship, especially, is that I had all these grandiose visions, you know, and the results wasn't catching up quite yet, you know. So I love that you guys are going to be able to do that. And then there, like you said, there's so many, it's not just real estate investment, right? I think people are forgetting that you need an appraiser, right? That's a cash business. Like, people get,
yo, they are making bank right now.
Yes.
I don't care what city you live in. I just had an appraiser quoted me $3,500 for one appraisal.
Are you serious?
But it's because it's a commercial deal. Unit.
Right, right, right. Okay.
Right.
Because I remember, but, I was like, I remember appraisals used to be $350.
So single family is $600, $800.
And they doing them daily.
When I met Main Man last week, he said he had 3 more to do and it was a Sunday. He said, I'm doing it on a Sunday.
Whew. And that's the part that I want people, matter of fact, yeah, I want your appraiser, because here's the thing. I think that people forget that there's multiple avenues. You hear industry, you hear real estate, and you think that you have to be the realtor, the investor, or the loan officer, right? And that those are the only three. There's title, there's appraisal, there's so many other ways to get into the industry. And then if you can, you know, again, licenses, you start making that money, maybe you open an appraisal firm, you know, and there's so many ways to get this money.
Nah, to your point, the barrier is a little harder for appraisals now.
Yeah.
Because it's almost like nursing. Like, you got to go to school for a year and not get paid and do an apprenticeship. So, like, I think to your point, though, if we learn these other industries, you'll realize, like, yo, again, you can be in the game, but you don't have to just be one thing. I think for us, real estate agent is kind of like the, I'm not going to say the low hanging fruit, but it's like the easiest barrier to entry, because you just need to go to class. But for the people who don't even want to go to class, they become wholesalers. But to me, wholesaling is, I don't think wholesaling is scalable because of the liabilities.
Right. Right. Yeah. Finding somebody to take over the contract is probably one of the riskiest, hardest things that you could do. You know,
when you're not licensed, yes, because it's different exposures. Depending on the state you're in, it can get really hairy.
Yeah.
You know, especially a state like Cali, you guys use lawyers.
All the time.
in New York, New Jersey, they use lawyers. So, you know, you're kind of limited. But there's other. So, again, I was in real estate before I knew it at 12 when I was a landscaper.
Yep.
You know, Imagine if I had learned how to do masonry work or something else or install windows. Like, I got a contractor. All he does is roofs. That's it. And he's killing them. He don't do nothing else. He do roofs and that's it. He don't do nothing else.
I love it. But listen, man, we got to get Anthony. This has been absolutely amazing. We got to do this again. One, but two, last question. Probably two more questions. I want to talk about vision one more time. I want to circle back because if you could look back to those early years when you were failing the test so many times and where you are now, would you have forgiven yourself if you would have gave up?
Oh man. No, I think where I'm at today is a part of the fact that I didn't give up. So me, when I was failing those tests, it showed that I was committed to the goal and the dream. Okay. I didn't know anything else, you know, and even now, like, so I've had experiences where I've lost money. Personally, I had a contract to burn me for $25,000, but I didn't quit.
Yeah.
You know, and I didn't say, oh, I'm not going to deal with contractors and rehabs no more. I've been here before. I've been down before.
Yeah.
It just ate up my profit. So, you know, again, but you get back on the horse and realize I'm not doing this just for a season or for one, you know, transaction. I'm doing this, you know, to get me to my goal. And until I get to the goal, I'm not quitting.
Love it. I love it. Let everybody know where they can find you online and what's next for Anthony Lee.
So again, Anthony Lee here in Philadelphia. I appreciate you guys having me. You can follow me at A. Lee Real Estate on all social medias. Anthony Lee, A. Lee Real Estate, YouTube, Facebook, and Instagram. Our next event, Philadelphia, is going to be January 23rd. If you connect with me on social media, on Instagram, the link is in my bio. And we're doing a ride along. And we always have educational events. So like in Philadelphia, I almost forgot, we've been speaking at a local high school every Thursday for the month of December and January, teaching about real estate and entrepreneurship.
Nice.
We're speaking to the juniors and the seniors because we want to, again, give them the opportunity to help them. Like, yo, whatever you're going to do next, you got a window and you don't realize that this window ain't going to wait till you graduate to figure out what I'm doing tomorrow.
Yeah.
So we're doing that. This summer, we're going to be having a big brunch basically here in Philadelphia. Where we're basically going to be bringing all the business owners, real estate investors and networkers to basically celebrate each other and just, you know, network and show love with each other. We're going to have a brunch this summer. That's going to be in June. And then outside of that, you know, just stay tuned to the social media stuff. There's no telling what we're going to come up with. But, you know, I mean, overall, I'm just looking forward. To me, my biggest thing right now is closing on this 6-unit. I promise you, I didn't see this day coming. When I be closing on this 6-unit, even now, if it wasn't for me hanging with the people I'm hanging with now that are doing bigger deals. So like, yes. You think you're doing, I'm the guy that's like, yo, I'm doing a house. I'm about to flip it. 3 bedrooms. My one boy, Lorenzo's like, yeah, I just bought 2 houses on Friday and I'm rehabbing 2 houses. Then I talked to my other boy, Dwayne. He's like, yeah, I just bought 13 units. Mind you, he's shooting the basketball as he talks.
Why is he saying it? Yeah.
Like,
see, and that's what I think people don't understand how, and I love that you're talking to the high school kids because I don't think people understand how exposure changes your expectations. I just did an interview with Brian Bean in Atlanta, and he just bought 20 acres of land in Atlanta. And he, you know, is going to do a whole little spread down there, conventions, whole little thing. And he said that he has some very prestigious neighbors, one NFL, one rap music. And he said, you know, I thought I was doing something when I had my welcome to the property party. He said, my rapper neighbor was like, hey, I'm going to give you $30,000. I need to use some of your land for parking. Bruh. Like, not only do you have 20 acres, you got other real estate going on, but somebody's giving you $30,000 just to park.
Just to park.
Just to park. My friends need parking spaces.
Just look politely. What does $30,000 do?
What does help? You know, and similar, like Rick Ross, $1 million to shoot a scene at a movie at your house. Like, come on. Like, I think that people, we our community, and I won't even say, I don't even want to get on that pedestal, but proximity to people that are getting it and doing it and are actively chasing their dreams will change your life.
Now, so I'll also say, I think the playing it safe mindset or the scarcity mindset,
yes,
or even the mindset just to not want to fail, it limits people in general, people as a whole. So like, I'm the first one to say, like, I didn't want a certain success and I didn't want certain things because I was scared of it. Right.
Yeah.
Now it's not a question of me being scared. Now it's a question, why not me? Like, I look at everything now from a standpoint of what I'm not doing is cheating and depriving my family and the opportunities for my kids' future and my future.
Right.
And, you know, it's like I have a mentor. He's lived in Spain the whole time during COVID because he was like, wow. Since we can't do anything here and I'm still making money, me and my family are moving to Spain. My kids will learn Spanish in Spain just because I want them to learn Spanish.
Greatness.
They're doing school virtually anyway.
Right.
And it's not a brag. And when you start getting comfortable with yourself, again, I thought I was doing something. Oh, I'm rehabbing the house. He said he's rehabbing too. He just bought 13 units. The old me honestly would be like, yo, why you got show off? Or it would make me feel small.
Yes.
But no, it's good motivation and competition when you hang around people that share with you how they're doing what they do. It's a difference exactly. When people around you share with you what they're doing.
Yes.
And they're not just, yo, you notice what I got. Oh, I'm going to tell you how I got it. I don't care. I'll tell you.
Absolutely.
You can get one too.
You can get it too. That's the perfect place to put an end on it. Ladies and gentlemen, listen, you have been rocking with the great one, Anthony Lee, and yours truly, Chuck Hawkins, here at the Hawk Vision Podcast. We've been talking about real estate, mindset, and so much more. I hope this interview was informative. I hope we added a smile to your day. But most importantly, we hope we helped you shorten the learning curve on your journey to success. Buy your boy a coffee. I'm empty. The link will be in the show notes. Like, share, and subscribe across all your platforms. Send in your messages and your guest suggestions. If we can make it happen, we absolutely will. I cannot continue to grow the show without you, my visionaries, and I'm so appreciative that you gave us your time today. You know how it goes. There is no miracle, absolutely no miracle that has ever happened without someone doing something. We'll see you either at the top or from the top. Mr. Anthony Lee, thank you for your time today, sir.
Thank you.